Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. It's December 27th, 2010, last broadcast of this year. And for many of you, you're in a relaxed mode, as I've heard from a number of you saying, kick back, can't wait to hear about what your thoughts are about the future. And that's what we're talking about. Our regular guests today will be Joe Farr, Alice Alvey, Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, and myself. And we're going to be talking today about kind of looking back over this last year and also looking forward definitely into making some predictions for the new year. Also, I love to hear about each of our resolutions and hear about what each of our Christmas are. This is a bit of a more of a relaxed program, and we hope you enjoy it. We welcome your feedback, and we thank you so many to all of you that are listening, and we have received so many comments that you're making this a regular part of your information gathering, what's going on. And it is so nice to connect, and that connection is made just a little bit deeper and richer when we hear from you. So please email us. You can email me at D as in David, LYKKEN, at mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Love to hear from you. I share all your comments with our guests. So please make a note of that and do so. Also, if you haven't already done so, head on over to Lickin' on Lending and register for the weekly updates. And we thank our friends at American Housing Media, American Housing or HousingMatrix.com, for their sponsorship over this last year of our radio program as it relates to the website and all. There's a host of tools out there that you want to get out and take a look at it. But without further ado, let's get to the top of what's happening in the world of interest rates. Joe Farr, welcome back to the program. I slaughtered it last week with you not being here.
I'm sure you did fine.
Well, we did all right, but it's just not quite the same as you doing it, Joe. And so how was your ski trip? How was the snow conditions over there in, where were you? Tahoe, were you not?
Tahoe, 4 feet of new snow. And as one of my friends from Utah said, Texans don't know how to ski in that, do they? And he was right. They don't.
4 feet of snow is a blessing. We had 4 feet. Last time I was there, we had 4 feet of new snow the week before, and it went up to like 60 degrees, and it was melting. We were skiing in shorts almost. It was so warm, but it turned into a slush bowl. But anyway, what's going on? Talking about slush bowls, let's talk about what's going on with interest rates, Joe. Give us an update. What's going on today?
Today we're down just a little bit. We're down 5/32 from where it ended the day. I guess it was last Thursday, last time when the market was open. This morning, China somewhat unexpectedly raised its rates again. This was the second time in 2 months that they've raised their rates. And, you know, the second time kind of indicates a fight to you know, they're fighting the rising inflation in China. And, you know, the fight maybe has just begun. So U.S. markets opened a little lower. We've been as low as down 8 today, but we've recovered some of it. Not terribly significant a movement, but you never know. We're in the middle of some fairly thin trading, and large market movements can happen just about any time.
Well, it's
really
interesting.
Nothing.
We get your focus on that as we get later in the program.
Okay.
Get your focus on the focus on China and the significance as we move forward into the new year. What's going on? Last week we had kind of one of those weeks of up and down and around, and so kind of like
mentioned, anytime you're in a market where things are just kind of thinly traded, there's not a lot of people have closed out their positions. Not a lot of activity in the market. You see fairly large swings in prices. It's not uncommon. Fortunately for the week, some of those swings in prices wound up being pretty much a flat week, in that rates didn't move a whole lot. Rates started ended the week just a little bit higher than they started the week. The economic data that came out throughout the week was all pretty much close to expectations. new and existing home sales were pretty much as expected. And fortunately, each of them showed some increase over October, albeit October is one of the worst months ever. But at least we saw an improvement over October, and durable orders was pretty close to expectation. Third quarter GDP was revised higher. So, generally, over the last month and a half or so, I think we've all seen that mortgage rates have risen. But quite frankly, they've risen due to the fact that the economy, general economic measures seem to be showing some improvement, and investors are concerned about that impact on inflation. So it's a good thing that has caused mortgage rates to rise, not a good thing that they have necessarily, but a good thing. It's been a good thing that has caused them to rise.
That's interesting. What do we got coming up this week?
Not a lot, David. We have three Treasury auctions. We have one that has just gone off. Apparently it was a strong demand, and that's somewhat maybe why we're seeing a little improvement in prices. The today was the 2-year auction. We have the 5 and the 7-year auctions coming up tomorrow and Wednesday. Other than that, not a lot going on. We've got consumer confidence tomorrow. Chicago PMI is probably the most significant thing that's going to come out, and that comes out on Thursday. We have pending home sales and jobless claims also on Thursday. So, again, thinly traded market, potentially large swings in prices. So pay attention.
It'll be an interesting, another interesting, well, maybe not so interesting. We'll find out. A lot of inactivity, and so we'll have to see what's going on here with what'll happen this week. Thank you so much, Joe. Glad to hear you had a great ski trip. Good to be with family. Merry Christmas. Again, thank you so much for being a part of big part of the success of the Lickin' on Lending broadcast. We just thank you so much and wish you and everyone. And we're going to be on with the program here in a minute, but just want to say thank you for your contribution over this last year. Really appreciate it. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. It's December 27th, and we're right in that kind of relaxed period of time in between Christmas and New Year's. But you know what? We've got to keep in mind there's still some deadlines that are coming up, and bringing it to us each and every week is the very talented president of Mortgage U, Alice Alvey. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Good to have you on here. What are the deadlines we got to keep in mind there, Alice?
Thanks, Dave. Merry Christmas to you, too. And, just a few things. Everyone has been watching Reg Z very closely with the ARM disclosure changes, and we did on just December 22nd get an extension to this. So the loan origination software companies we've been talking to have all been scrambling to reprogram that truth in lending disclosure to show all the possible high rates associated with an ARM transaction. So the TIL is going to get a new look. And there were some unanswered questions out there about 5/1 ARMs. And the Fed came in, gave us some details about showing how to make sure we're showing a 5/1 ARM appropriately, how to make sure we're showing interest-only information appropriately. And with this additional guidance, they've now given us an extension all the way till October 1st of 2011. So that's the good news here. You don't have to have your ARM disclosures ready by the end of January. Another extension that you may have heard us talk about last week was with FHA, and that they've given what I'm calling a partial extension to certain aspects of the loan correspondent status. So they have nothing they can change about the fact that on January 1st, the loan correspondent status goes away. But if you were able to get a case number on a loan as a loan correspondent and you got it approved by the end of this week, essentially, so by next Monday, if you can get a loan approved as a loan correspondent, and you have warehouse line capabilities, then you can still close it in your own name all the way up until March 31st. But remember, case number ordered and loan approved before December 31st. So it's not really that big of a window. The second piece is the change for the principal-agent relationship. Those of you who have gone up to mortgagee status and you've earned that, but you haven't necessarily been able to make it through earning your delegated underwriting approval, you haven't been through test cases, maybe you're still looking for an underwriter like so many companies are, you have time to get yourself through that. That's the extension to July 1st. So no change in the net worth requirements or any of that or needing mortgagee status by January 1st here, just that you have until July 1st to get your DE set up. And in the meantime, you can use principal agent relationships. So that was a big one. Yeah.
That is a big one.
Yeah, that was a big one. Our risk-based pricing disclosures are still effective for our applications starting next Tuesday, so hopefully you've gotten the information from your credit providers and you've got your system set up to be able to include these disclosures for your customers. And then today is the day that the comment period closes for appraiser independence comments. This is really, you know, primarily something the community banks and credit unions need to take a look at to be able to identify that you're able to handle appraiser independence tracking similar to the home valuation code of conduct that the rest of the industry had for, you know, the last better part of a couple of years. Those comments must be in by today if you have anything to say about appraiser independence rules under Dodd-Frank. So that's kind of the big news, the big deadlines we have to watch for right now. And, you know, we'll get into the heavier stuff next week that we have to watch through January and February.
There's a lot. It kind of feels a little bit like the regulators are like the Grinch that tried to steal this Christmas. We watched that as a family. Again, the Grinch that stole Christmas. So anyway, I was thinking about that as you were doing your segment.
Oh, that's certainly a great movie.
That is a great movie. It's certainly a lot of regulatory and rule changes that definitely has challenged our industry. We're going to get into that and reflect on what has happened and more what's going to be coming up in the future, folks. You're going to want to stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lincoln.
It's good to have you back. We want to thank you, so many listeners. Merry Christmas to all of you. Happy New Year. We appreciate you tuning in and letting us be a part of your professional life. And also, it seems like we're crouching in on the holidays. It seems like it's one of those times where this is so many of you are taking time off, but I see on our panel so many of you dialed in. I wish I could bring you all onto the program and say thank you to each and every one of you, have you hear what went on with your Christmas. But I know you're here dialed in to hear what's going on and get our views, and that's what we're going to get into. This, again, this is kind of like one of those relaxed weeks, everybody. I mean, you sit and look at it. We're all here, some of us that are working at our desk, many are. And but it's in a more of a relaxed mode. At least it seems like it, although I'm looking at the meetings that are coming up on my calendar where I'm being invited to meetings already this today and Wednesday and parts of this. So it may actually be a very, very busy week. Well, I hope it's been a good year for each of our listeners and all of you that tune in and for many in the industry. It has been a challenging year. And we're going to bring in Alice and Andy and Joe, and we're going to talk about a year in review, but also spend a lot of time really focusing in on the future as we look at 2011. Volume, one of the things we all know in reading and can easily anticipate, that the volumes in 2011 are going to be less than they were in 2012. Excuse me, than they were in 2010. Excuse me, we don't need to think about 12, although my mind is on 12 as we look at 2011 and what's going to continue into that. So, without further ado, let's bring on our regular panelists. And many of you comment how much you appreciate it when we just sit around and talk about the issues such as we're about to do it. So, Alice, Andy, and Joe, appreciate you being on here with us and sharing with our listeners so much of what's going on. Joe, let's start off with you and kind of stay in the format of the radio program that we do. We start off at the top of every program and a review of interest rates. If you could kind of give us a review of what's happened, kind of your personal relaxed view, and then also any thoughts about what you see coming in the future.
Well, we've all been blessed with very, very low rates this year, have we not? I mean, the lowest rates in decades, and many of us made a lot of money because of that, and we've been disappointed here over the last month and a half or so as those rates have risen. But again, to have seen the lowest rates in decades has been a really nice thing. Now,
Yeah.
One of the problems with that is...
I think it's a good way to put it. It's a blessing. It has been a real blessing for many.
Well, the other side of that, though, as we mentioned earlier about why rates have risen, I mean, the better things are for the economy, the worse things are for rates and vice versa. So, you know, we saw a very, very difficult economy, obviously, and federal government did a whole lot to try to improve the economy and at the same time reduce rates. So the rates we saw were quite frankly artificially low relative to market rates, where they should be without all the stimulus and without all the involvement of the government. And we're going to see those turn around, I think. I happen to believe that the indications are that the economy is improving and will continue to improve, albeit at a slow pace. But the mortgage rates need to exceed expected inflation to be years down the road, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. And as we continue to show some improvement, that inflationary expectation is going to continue to rise. And so
go ahead. Sorry, finish up your thought.
So we've seen very, very, very low rates as inflation has been very, very low and the prospects for growth have been minimal. And we've seen that start to turn around. And unless something comes along that really changes the opportunity for future economic growth, we're going to see rates rise.
Yeah, without question. China, one of the things you touched on in your segment, and I definitely Allison and Andy jump in here at any time, but your thoughts on China, with them facing real inflation, and it appears to be very real, they're having to raise rates, and if they're raising rates, is it possible that they're going to continue to buy at the levels that they have with our rates being as they are, or like as one commentary I read over the weekend implied that because of the quality of our debt, while we have got all the issues going on related to our debt that are real, still, even in that weakened condition or compromised condition, however you care to think about it, the fact is the real estate mortgage-backed securities, the whole economy, U.S. economy, is still one of the more stable in the country if you look at what's going on, especially when you consider what's going on in Europe. Now, so the question is this. I'm trying to frame up a question here. The question is, based on where we see our economy and our interest rates being lower and probably than where China's interest rates are going, do you see any changes in their appetite for buying specifically, treasuries or mortgage backs? Not that the QE2 has kind of changed up the mortgage back formula, but what's your thoughts on that? Do you see them saying, can't afford to buy at those rates?
Every investor makes a decision based on what his alternatives are, and those are alternatives are risk-based yields. And right now, as you mentioned, there may be very little risk assigned to an investment in a treasury or in a mortgage-backed security that's government guaranteed. But if they can get the same yields on internal investments at lower future risk, meaning I said no risk. Obviously, there's always the risk of extension or prepayment risks associated with mortgage-backed securities. But the long-term yields that you get on mortgage-backed securities may not be a good investment relative to shorter-term equal yields on internal investment. So, yeah, every as internal rates rise, yields on internal rates rise, so must other investments if they want to compete to for the investors' dollars. So, I don't see a reason for China to choose to not buy our mortgage-backed securities or not buy our treasuries from a risk of repayment perspective, but certainly possibly from a yield perspective.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a yield perspective that I would be wondering about. Andy Schell, I know both you and Joe being CPAs, I would love to get your thoughts on what Joe's commenting about interest rates. Want to jump in here, please?
Oh, I've enjoyed listening to Joe. You know, he not only is a CPA, but he's CFO of one of the largest companies in the country at one point and just has this over 30 years experience, and he's just been there, done that, knows this stuff so well, and enjoy listening to him.
Well, I think there's no perspective.
Well, thank
you. to your point, Andy, is that it's having that sense of history, and I wonder about so many that are in the industry that have enjoyed just the good part, the good times, and we certainly have had unusual years, and some people may feel like veterans. They've been in the industry now for 10 years, but over the last 10 years, we've had nothing but just really, with a few exceptions here, from some really amazing times, some major corrections. So I think that sense of history, Andy, is a great point. I appreciate that. But you go ahead.
Everything I know about finance doesn't matter, doesn't work. You know, I graduated from college in the 70s, back when
long time ago.
Well, so, you know, but what I learned about inflation and interest rates was that as you had higher deficit spending, and had more dollars out, you had the potential of higher inflation, and it wasn't presented as a potential, it was presented as a reality.
Yeah.
And, you know, we coming out of the late 70s, we had higher inflation than we had seen in ever, just about. And then, you know, Paul Volcker switched us to the monetarist philosophy and didn't watch the rates, but watched the money supply. And that's when we had, you know, prime up at 21%. And we all saw that. Pardon me?
That's a great point. I just got a text from someone saying, you know, I love what Andy's saying here. Is do you think, you know, and I'd love to start with you, your opinion on this, Andy, and then go to Joe, and then Alice, you chime in. But one of the things is, are we going to see history repeat itself to that extent? Are we going to, is there potential for us to be facing in some inflationary environments with the monetary policies that's going on? And thus, are we going to see the potential for some of this? I mean, what's your thoughts on that,
I don't
Andy?
See how you can eventually, ultimately, a $13 trillion deficit has to be addressed. And if you do what the Russians do and monetize the ruble, then that's bad. You lose credibility in the international marketplace, so that's unlikely. And I don't know when, but I think there will be a day of reckoning. I just don't know when it's going to be because, everything I thought about would happen hasn't happened. So if I was really good at predicting the future, I'd already own my island and wouldn't be here today.
You would be here today because you love the game. You're kind of addicted to this thing. I think that's what's so much about mortgage banking. That's why guys like Joe stay in this thing forever. You know, after they made their money and could go to the retirement lines, they stay in it. Joe, what's your thoughts about, you know, as we look forward, are we going to have a repeat of history to the extent that we have in the past? I mean, what's the rates? 18, 19% back in the 80s? I mean, in the late 70s? It's crazy.
You know, I don't see that. I mean, if anything, you know, the deficit is going to cause people to, you know, to shift their funds elsewhere, taxes go up and slow the economy. So I don't see it becoming a Carter era kind of runaway inflation. I think the Fed still has the ability to reverse course to a large degree and slow things down.
I agree. Alice, you've been quiet out there.
Well, I remember
there.
That. I had one loan in the pipeline, a fixed rate that was at 21%. Remember the ARMs, one-year ARMs were 11%. And, you know, it is kind of scary to think, for those who weren't around that, to know, okay, what were the factors back then that are different to make us feel that today we won't head back to that. And I think Joe just hit on it. You know, the administration is different, and the thinking is different.
But I think there's also some
really good perspective that we may not have. Are you still all there? Can I hear you? I saw my phone line just went dead. I just want to make sure you can
I'm
hear
here.
Me all right.
No,
all right,
we're
good,
here.
good.
Yeah,
it was so quiet. I don't know why. It just went quiet. I'm going, oh, no. We didn't have a technology. I think, Alice, what you just brought out was a really good point that I want to keep everyone's mind. It doesn't really matter. We need housing. We need housing finance. And we're going to find ourselves in a place where no matter where interest rates going, we're going to find – we were doing loans back then, Alice. You were still shipping loans. You were busy back in those days.
Yeah,
granted,
right.
It wasn't the volume
yeah.
levels. But and I think this really brings up the one question is we may see – think people are busy right now. And I want to put this to you. A lot of people are asking this question, should I hire right now, knowing that we have a reality is that volumes are going to drop off. And should I hire right now to take care of current volumes, or should I try to make it by? I'd love to get your perspective on that, and I go around to each one of you. So let's go with you, Alice, and Joe, and Andy.
Well, you know, in the pre-show, we talked a little bit about just that, and Joe brought up in particular on, you know, everybody has to get their operation in line. You know, service is going to be king in 2011, especially if we're looking at volumes going down. And a lot of shops are what we keep jokingly calling the Bubba Gump shrimp boats right now. You know, they're survivors. They've got lots of business. Rates are low. They're still overall relatively low. And just, they just have a ton of business coming in the door. They can't find underwriters. They can't find staff. And they're grappling with this, should I hire now because I'm killing my staff. They've been through
yeah.
this. We've been afraid to hire when 2011 predictions are, you know, very different, that volume's going to be down substantially next year. And so, you know, you get different mindsets. It depends on the shop. And Andy will say it depends on your cost. Can you afford
mm-hmm.
it? And so do you, I mean, some you just have to hire or you're going to, in some cases, they're frying their staff, just frying them. And you're going to end up with nobody to close loans if you don't get some help in the door. And plan to be able to figure out how you're going to be the survivor in 2011 to get the businesses out there.
Joe, you've been through that. What's your recommendations for them as they look at 2011?
Well, you have to maintain a staff level that will get the job done and get it done timely and in compliance. You know, that's
right.
Alice's key is to it doesn't do you any good to close a loan if you cannot sell it. So you know you have to have staff, and unfortunately, I think the downside to the having to have more staff to deal with all the new compliance issues, et cetera, is going to be borne by the customer.
Right.
I think that those who have the most efficient operations will be required to pass on the least amount of additional cost, then it'll make them more competitive. But, you know, the customer is going to wind up being asked to pay more. What might seem like large initial gross margins will really become necessary just to get to a good bottom line.
Yeah, I think I agree. Andy, your perspective, Profit Doctor. I got a feeling where you're going to go with this.
Well, I agree with everything that Joe and Alice said. Mortgage banking has been the python swallowing the pig forever. We've always had waves and changes and volume fluctuations, and December's good or is it bad, and July's good, oh no, it's bad. And so it's been moving around a lot. So mortgage bankers forever have been having to deal with this. And I think one of the ways to deal with it that I've seen done fairly successfully is by margin management. And I don't mean margin, just the increased margin we're going to have as a result of the additional expenses the business has. I think that's a reality that's going to be there, and people need to be able to understand their numbers to know how much additional margin they need. But I mean by if things are backing up a bit, then raise your rates some as well. That'll help,
and
too.
And we're seeing evidence of that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they want, you know, one of the things I'm seeing is that, like Joe said, it's a blessing. You know, they've made a lot of money, and a lot of management likes that extra money, and it's trying to pry away the purse strings to go, you're going to have to invest more in your operation so the customer is happy. Because I think we got a lot of companies that are really struggling with not so happy customers right now.
Well, and I think part of that comes from having efficient operations that are supported by effective technology, and then
right.
having training on the front end where you set reasonable expectations, because I see this often. The customers are told, you'll close in 10 days, close in 2 weeks, and underwriting's backed up 20 days. So
right.
there's no
yep.
way they're going to close in 10 days. So there's not much you can do about on an FHA underwrite except for doing it with your own staff. Some of the other aspects of the business, though, I'm a proponent of outsourcing some of the activities to the extent that you can to leverage the efficiency of someone else so that you can push off maybe some of the post-closing or some of the back-office stuff can move to someone else. But anyway, I think everybody's hit it. You got to be efficient, and you got to do it right.
I got two T's I want to throw in here. It's what's good and greed. I think greed has a tendency to hit on the point that you were talking about, Alice, is I want to hold on to every dollar. I want to try to get everything. I mean, there's great margins here, but you're killing your people, folks, and you can't afford to do that. It's not good. It's not. You think about it, is that really good? No, it's absolutely not. And is greed starting to set in there? I want to make as much money out of this, so you're going to just ruin everyone else's, you know, life and burn out some really quality people. And then think about this. How many people are unemployed right now? And it's the Christmas holidays, and you could have hired them, or you should be hiring as you look at the next for a while. They would appreciate, even if they know it's a short-term deal, you can do it through an outsourcing company. Great idea, Andy. Great point. Or you could hire someone on a temporary basis, say, I need you now. This is not going to be a permanent full-time position. We anticipate volumes going down, but why don't you come on in? You can make some money now. There's good money being made by mortgage bankers, and I think it's that balance between doing what's good for your people, for your business, for your customers, for the investors, and then the greed factor that sets in is, yeah, but if we could just make them work one more hour, a little bit extra, we can just make that much more. It's a perspective, and folks, we'll be right back with more perspective. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan, if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. This is December 27th, and you're listening to a program of just the regular, sitting around, kind of like a fireside chat. We like to think we're all there. We could have a virtual fireplace kind of playing on each one of our computer screens up here as we join together and treat it like a fireside chat. But anyway, it's good to get the perspective of what's going on. And Alice, we've talked a little bit about road rates, and Joe, we're going to get more into that as we go back into talking about that. We're getting some commentary and thoughts coming in from people with some questions. But Alice, let's talk about from a regulatory environment. What do you see as you look back over this year, this last year, certainly one of the most unprecedented years from regulatory standpoint and a rules changing standpoint? And then what do we have to look forward to as we look into 2011? More of the same, easing off? What's your thoughts?
Well, I think everybody knows looking forward is going that there is a lot to be faced, that we're faced with in 2011. You know, we're still getting questions on RESPA. So it was exactly a year ago that everyone was cramming to get RESPA done because we hadn't officially gotten any kind of all-out extension. We had been told that there would be loose enforcement to April 1st, but essentially around this time last year, we were all biting our fingernails and trying to race out doing training, you know, 24/7 on RESPA. And we spent all year, and we still don't feel, I think, that we have a firm grasp on it. With MDIA that rolled out in RESPA, we've seen the capacity for an underwriter drop dramatically. And I think in 2011, that is going to be a focal point right now, at least the start of 2011 for sure, as people are still trying to get volumes through. How do we get underwriting more efficient? Because they're handling this regulation. They're handling, and so do you separate out those functions? Do you make compliance check people? And so now has compliance become so big an underwriter can't do it as well as also do Fannie, Freddie, and appraisal analysis. So as we roll out Dodd-Frank, you know, we've got upwards of 10-plus major segments of that law that we have to implement in 2011. And so we're in for a lot. And the potential, too, that they want non-depositories to be following anti-money laundering and SARS reporting. So, you know, we're not done yet. This is going to continue at a feverish pace. In 2011, people are going to have to step up and be involved. That's my message.
Well, I think you hit on a huge point, is we're asking so much more of our underwriters. I know, Andy, you and I, the Profit Doctor, you and I were on a conversation this last week, and we're talking about what is the realistic number of loans that a company should, an underwriter should be expected to underwrite. And we're starting to hear some reports that it's way down, and it comes back to the thing we were talking about a little bit earlier, Alice, before we went to the break, is the reputational risk from missing closing dates. But what's even more important than a connected to the reputational risk is a missing disclosure, missing the regulatory things that you need to be reviewing. And is it fair to be dumping this all on your underwriters? And if we do that, are they really the best place to be doing all that? I just really want to dive into that whole aspect a bit more.
Well, if you look at your you know, eons, years and years ago, we could say an underwriter checked was the last set of eyes for compliance and risk analysis and, you know, basically said, okay, this loan's clear to close.
Yeah, but it was a much
more
simplistic loan.
Now you've had to divide
loan.
That up. Yeah. Now it's if you want them to be able to look at two files a day, then you go ahead and have that really long laundry list on their plates. So.
Well, share with what you and Andy found that when you were out here with some recent companies you've been both looking at. What is it realistic that an underwriter, and if there's any of your underwriters listening to this, I'm sure you're going to be going, uh-oh, are they going to help me out or are they going to hurt me here? What
right.
is realistic across the industry right now as far as the number of loans an underwriter should be able to look at if they have everything dumped on them to be reviewing and checking off? Alice?
Yeah. Well, obviously I'm going to always preface it by that varies by shop, right? It always varies
yeah.
by the quality of what's coming in from the originator. It varies, too, on the experience of the underwriter. You know, a lot of them come from automated underwriting right now. If you've been underwriting for less than 15, 18 years, you come from underwriting with automated underwriting as a tool. So, you know, when you now say, hey, that's just a suggestion, you now have to do all this yourself. And, you know, to a point Joe was making, you know, underwriters feel like they have to box check, they have to get everything. So it can get down to 2 to 3 files on a day, averaging in that range. That's not acceptable as a company. I mean, you need to – we yep. help companies assess that and come up with systems to get that number up.
Andy?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's always been balancing the do it right the first time versus how long does it take to do it right the first time? And that's some of the principles we've talked about that applies to any area of the businesses. You know, the efficiency versus effectiveness. You want it to be done well, quickly, and correctly every time. And I think people have gotten nervous a little bit about some of the consequences of some of these regulatory changes. And I think it really just comes down to training. And systems, again,
yeah.
having the right people yeah. doing the right things at the right time. And like Alice was just talking about, if you get someone from a third party to come in and say, this is what ultimately needs to be done, let's figure out a way to do that more efficiently, I think things can pick up and you can hit some higher efficiencies to get, you know, maybe the 3 to 4 loans on an FHA file a day. But it's going to be a baby steps at first, simply because people don't want to be wrong.
And you know,
right, Joe?
I have a question, Joe. I wanted to ask you a question about that. You made a comment about, you know, empower the underwriters to make decisions and allow them to make mistakes. I mean, from a secondary perspective, is there? I used to take the perspective for my underwriting staff of, you know, if you didn't have a repurchase once in a while, then you were leaving loans on the table.
Yeah,
is there a number I want to ask the CPAs?
There's,
is there a number of repurchases I should have?
There's no surprise that underwriters have a difficult job today. I mean, you think about all the challenges that have been made as everyone's pushing back loans and every decision they've made, all the changes in underwriting guidelines, all the changes and all those were to be made tougher. I mean, it's easy to understand that somebody, an underwriter, might not be able to identify a good loan, or they might not be able to identify a loan that is sellable without a great deal of consternation and you know, study. So, yeah, my point is that in order to
improve the customer's experience, which I think is a key. That's my key to success in 2011. Improve your customer's experience. One of the steps in that is to improve not only the relationship with the LO, but all the way through the process, the underwriter being a key function. That underwriter needs to be just as concerned about that customer's experience as the LO is. And in order to do that, you're going to have to empower them a little bit. You're going to have to give them the confidence to be able to make decisions and to, you know, and with that may come a repurchase request on occasion. But, you know, if you've got people working together all the way up and down the line, you're going to create an opportunity for your company to do much more business in a smaller marketplace and hopefully build on that for years to come.
Joe, I think you hit on a really good point. I think I'm looking at some of your notes that you submitted to the group here for before the broadcast. And to be successful in 2011 is really empowering that underwriter, bringing back the confidence. There's so many underwriters that have had their confidence shaken. And I think you really raised a good point in your notes is that, you know, we've got to get back to these people. We got so reliant. You know, we keep referring to humans as carbon-based systems and computers as, you know, silicone-based systems. We became so reliant, Alice, I know you've talked about this, on the silicone-based systems, those lien loan decisioning, box-checking, as Joe puts it. And I really think it's coming back to we're going to create, go back to the future a little bit, but with same tools, but empowering the underwriters to allow them to make mistakes, but also empowering them to feel, return to where they were. Thoughts, Alice?
Well, I think you have to say, will B of A and Wells and the other big guys still be box checking the file? So that's all well and good if I'm a community bank and I portfolio lending, but if I've got to still push my, I'm trying to get my underwriters to not be box checkers, to empower, to know, learn, teach them what is a good loan decision, but then I still have to send it up to another investor who's going to box check it and not take into consideration So I think there's a gap there that, you know, cause somehow to get the big guys to start out at the top of understanding, you know, how to manage this better without it just being box checking.
Well, I think to Joe's point that he has made a couple times on this program over this last year is it's really important to have the good investor relationships. Joe, you talk about interest rates. You're talking about the importance of having, maintaining those relationships. Any tips for our listeners? Some of the folks, so we have a full range of here, as you guys all know. We have a full range. We have loan originators. We got business owners. We got bankers in here. Joe, what would be the wisdom you would suggest as we look forward into 2011 for how to really make those investor relationships to strengthen them? And knowing that we have that conflict of what our underwriters understand and are doing a responsible job, at least the best of their abilities, yet we have the box checkers up there with the credit overlays. What's your suggestions?
Well, respect the relationship to the point where you're proactive in providing information.
How
you're
be proactive. That's where I go. Describe proactive. I know how you do it very well. It's all about communication. Describe some of the things that you have done in the past, because I think this is a thing where we're going back to communication between the originator, the seller of the loan, and the buyer of the loan. It's got to be back to where it was. We can't rely on those systems.
Well, if you have a glitch in your delivery process, let them know about it. Don't ask them to tell you about it. If you're proactive in correcting that glitch, let them know you're doing that. If you've had a trouble with a particular branch or an underwriter somewhere, let your investors know you're paying closer attention to the loans produced out of there. It's just make them trust that you're going to be a long-term valued partner.
Yeah, I think that starts with the originator working with their own underwriting department, their own processing and underwriting department. It starts with, you know, the loan originator and all the things, taking the time to do that extra communication. And then same with the underwriters to the investors that are buying it all the way around. Andy, we talk a lot about within our group here about the importance of knowing your margins and understanding that overall, the value proposition beyond just the intrinsic value, but the real dollars dropping to the bottom line. How do you see this as in the future of 2011, Profit Doctor?
Well, I mean, it's what I said almost every week that I've been on the show, is that you need to have loan-level profitability.
And I think that as margins are changing and as margins are increasing and as loan officer compensation is changing and as the business efficiencies are changing because of the regulatory environment is changing, you can't just wing it. You can't assume it has been like it's been because we all know it's not. And as it's different, the way to survive in an environment that's different is being able to measure your path and know that what you're stepping on is not a landmine. And so you do that by knowing your cost, knowing your revenue, understanding your revenue model, and how it all fits together. So you can get to the profitability by originator, profitability by branch. You know, you may have an originator out there that's always scrambling up your closing process, creating reputation risk both for the customer and for the title company and knowing the realtors and everybody in the chain. And you may run your numbers and realize that originator that's causing all this trouble is your lowest profit originator. They may be a high volume, but a low profit originator that's causing all this trouble. And so there's you can react to that and make the informed business decisions when you have the right information and complete information.
Let's talk about that. There's so many times we have talked about, you know, we walk into a shop and we consult the business owners. Alice, you've seen it. Joe, I know you've seen it. And we're going to talk about what you as an originator can do to make yourself more desirable to your companies, more profitable. And there's some surprises here. It's not all about volume. We're going to be right back with more on this topic right after this brief break.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Folks, I want to say welcome back. This is the Licken & Lending Program. This is David Licken. It is December 27th. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to all of you. We're talking to loan officers right at this moment. I want to talk to you about it's not all about volume. It's about being able to understand the importance of the whole food chain. If there was ever a time, it's you understand the whole process, it's now. It is about volume, but it's not about volume. I have a story I'm writing about. It'll be publishing in the National Mortgage Professional this next month. It's about the pliers, but it's not about the pliers. It's really talking about what is really at the core of it. Many times we get invited to go into shops and we get asked to say, well, by the owner of the shop, the mortgage company or the bank, we'll say, well, this is the person because he's our number one producer. Almost we put a bullseye over that guy, not always, but sometimes we realize the person that is the highest volume is not always the person that gets to the ROI and that return on investment. So I think loan officers that are listening, and we're so glad you listen because you're the ones that are really wanting to change and grow up. By the fact that you're investing the time to listen to this program each and every week, you're telling and indicating to us and to yourselves and to your companies and the industry that you're about growth and changing. So let's, Profit Doctor, let's get briefly into ROI. Let's talk about why it is so important that a loan officer understands the full food chain, the full perspective. And then I want to come back a little bit later and talk about ROI and why it's so attractive, why mortgage banking is so attractive to the industry. So, Profit Doctor, give us a few thoughts about the loan officers, what they should be considering as they look at their value contribution to the overall ROI process.
Well first off, originators...
Formula, I guess.
Sure. Well, first off, originators don't like the hassle of disappointing customers. They don't like the hassle of pissing off the realtors. Oops, sorry. We're on a broadcast. Don't want to use inappropriate language. But, you know, loan officers... You know, I've been on the front of the house, too, and you've got to be able to look eye-to-eye with your customers, be it the realtor, the the customer that's borrowing the money, the title company, your builder, all these people, they want it to all go smoothly. So why is it that we get ourselves in a mess with these closings? Well, a lot of times it's because we feel like we can't be honest. We feel like we have to just say, yes, we can get it done, because we think the realtor will go somewhere else. You know, if that realtor relationship was really, really solid and you could be honest with them, because everybody's having the same backup, just let them know the truth about what's facing the business. And if you're an originator that is all about, it's kind of like the narcissist said, and I've heard Dave use this. I've copied him saying this on some presentations I've done. You know, the narcissist says, enough of me talking, now tell me what you think of me. And so,
so what do you think about me?
So as an originator, if it really is only and all about you, you're probably going to fail, because it can't be just about you. It's got to be about the team and the company as a whole. If the company loses money on every loan that you do, then the company's going to go out of business.
Doesn't matter if you're the top producer. Exactly right.
Yeah, and you'll be gone. So it's got to be about the team. Everybody wants to have a fun work environment. People don't wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to go into the job today and do a bad job. People want to do well, and they want to be able to do well, and working together with realistic expectations that affect the customer, I think, are essential, and will ultimately drive through to profitability by everybody working together.
Hey, and Andy, can I say one thing, too, on that, you, just to support your point about, you know, the communication and for the LO side. I was in a shop last week and was doing a presentation, and I had talked with management about the fact that industry standards were down to 2 to 3 loans a day for a loan originator. But when I said that to the originators, they were shocked. They didn't know that. And if you tell them that, then they can communicate right to the realtors. But they're all probably still thinking, hey, at most shops, can't they still do 10 a day? Well, that was a number from the 90s, you know, that in early 2000s. That's not today. So sometimes just helping them understand what realistic expectations are is something management thinks they know just intuitively. You need to sit down and talk to them and tell them.
It's called leadership. We're going to be talking more about that next week's program. It's about leadership in the mortgage industry. We're going to be talking a lot about what is required, what are the changes of leadership, how do we see, what does it take to be an effective leadership, a leader in the industry, both at an LO level, as a business owner, a department head, or an investor. A lot of good information will be coming out next week. You're going to tune in on that. But let's talk again, Alice, I think, about that communication that goes on between the executive, the underwriter, and the LO. I think number one is there's no question the LO is so important to the process. There's been more to devalue or send signals that we don't value originators. The reality is without you, we don't exist. The mortgage industry doesn't exist. We need you badly in the process. But there's changes coming. You're going to have to make changes. We're all having to make changes, and that's what this program is about. We want to educate you on what you can do and how you can be more effective. Again, the biggest number you should not be talking about is necessarily that you're the top producer, unless you accompany that with, and my production is some of the cleanest going through the company. Now, if you're both, hey, man, go for it. We're proud of you. We want to hear from you. We want to celebrate you. In fact, we're going to have some of you on the program this next year talking about that, how you can both be a top producer as well as having not just being a top producer creating chaos, but creating a real solid ROI and understanding how it all goes into it. Alice, I know you've seen this a lot. It's a big obstacle. So what is it, one message that you would have for our loan originators there in the audience today that can allow them to have more success? And then, Joe, I'm coming to you so you can start thinking about it.
Well, I think, you know, it is a team. You know, it's not operations' fault when a loan doesn't close. You know, it's everybody as a group has to work, as we've said through the show here today, in a smooth process, communicating fair expectations up front, everybody having clear job descriptions and roles on what is their job, and making sure they do their part and not expect, you know, not constantly pass it on down the line, which, you know, so often happens. And I think everybody has to just accept the industry is a challenge today. It's hard for all of us to know it all, you know, all the compliance, all Fannie, all Freddie, all B of A, whatever credit overlays. it's hard, every single file, and so we just have to be open with our customers that, you know, we're setting realistic expectations. And I would say on the communications side, step out from behind email. That's my message
for
2011.
Great, great point. Yeah, but you can use social media. It's a very effective tool of communicating kind of what's going on out there, but talk to people. Joe, jump in here. I know you've got a lot of thoughts. You've got many, many originators that are great customers of yours, and we all value them. What's your perspective of what they can do to be better citizens in the process? I mean, not that they're not good. We value them. But how can they improve and even be better than they already are?
I think just a process of elimination. We're getting to those who know the full process. Alice spoke about it earlier. You got to know everything about the process so that you can get ahead of the issues. You can forewarn customers about things that are going to happen in the process. You can go ahead and ask for things up front that the customer needs to bring to the first meeting, because you know the process. You know what's going to be necessary. Put your customer through the least amount of hassle you can. This year has to. I hadn't seen a survey, but I would be very surprised if this year didn't have the poorest ratings on customer experience in the origination process.
That's a good point.
And we got to change that, and you can change that just by knowing more about the process than you do today.
We look forward to 2011. Let's look at this. Is this a good time to be in the industry? Andy, I know you and I are working on finishing up to get an article published in the Mortgage Bankers Magazine for February. We're writing a lot about this. But, Andy, and then I want to get all the way around, go back to you, Joe, and off to Alice. But we have 4 minutes remaining, so let's keep that in the back of our minds. But is this a good time to be in the industry? What is the ROI that people can expect?
I think it's a fabulous time to be in the industry. I think it is probably one of the best times to get in the industry ever. The margins are higher, the efficiencies are improving. I know we're talking about the underwriting issues, but the general flow of the details will get cleaned up, and I think that getting an ROI that is going to be exceptional is very, very real, especially given your alternatives with treasuries less than 5 and even the S&Ps less than 15. We have mortgage bank clients that are hitting 35, 40, 50% return on investment. I mean, that's astounding. 4 times what you can do in the stock market. We've learned from the past, and we're improving the future. We're dealing with some regulatory changes, but I absolutely believe that now is the best time to invest in mortgage banking, and it's going to be strong returns for those investors.
Profit Doctor, do you think the ROI is going up or going to be eroding over the next 2011?
Well, I think the first thing is you have to be able to manage your numbers. And I think if you really are watching your numbers and understand the dynamics, I think you can preserve your margin. I think if you're not watching your margin and you're just winging it, I think your margins are going to shrink.
Joe, do you think this is a good time to be in mortgage banking? Better? Worse? What's your thoughts?
I think it's a great time for those who create an environment with the least amount of friction. And there's going to be lots of movement. We were 45 minutes into the show before loan officer compensation was mentioned, but that is going to be a big deal. Not as big a deal as everyone is making it out to be, but it is going to cause people to move from place to place. And if you have a place that creates little friction in the origination process, you're going to be able to pick and choose who you want to have work for you.
As far as the small guys, do you think the small guys have an opportunity for a good year in 2011?
I think they have maybe a better opportunity than the
even
big guys.
Even an advantage?
Maybe, sure.
More
flexible.
Alice, what's your recommendation for what's your thoughts on 2011 as it relates to mortgage banking? Good time to be in the business?
I think it's a great time. You know, operations just has to hang tough and keep building your expertise. We're there, you know, team spirit. We're there to help you get the loans closed, right? We can do it.
It's going to be a great year, folks. I think this is a good time. And if you're in the mortgage industry and you've come to this point, it's like Alice said, it's like Bubba out there with the shrimp boats. They've all sunk. Stay in the business. You're going to do really, really well. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all of our listeners. A special thank you to our sponsors. Appreciate them so much. Also, a very big thank you goes out to Housing Matrix at housingmatrix.com for being a part of help promoting the program this last year. PMI, everybody else, thank you so much. Have a blessed and wonderful Christmas. I mean, New Year, everybody, and Merry Christmas. Thank you.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Albee, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.